Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. This week, Dan Lust, joined by Justin Mader and our resident district attorney, Matt, don't panic, Tim Panic. What's up, gentlemen?
How you doing?
How are we doing today?
It has been a while since we've had a traditional sports law episode. We've got a lot of NIL hour as of late. We've done those fun episodes with Conlon and myself, but it's going back to our roots for this Monday. Got a couple topics on the docket. Yes, we did see Britney Spears assault Wembanyama. We are probably maybe going to talk about it a little bit at the end, but mainly this podcast is going to be dedicated to the ongoing criminal controversy of a guy. Actually, I'm not even going to try to say his name. Chiefsaholic, the Chiefs mascot guy, the super fan. We're going to talk about him being arrested. Matt just put out a thread on that, so good to have you. And then two stories that happen to be big sports stories in the world of college sports. We'll try not to encroach on the NIL hours jurisdiction, but these are not NIL stories. This is a story about Northwestern's hazing scandal. Big story coming out of that world. Justin, that's your jurisdiction over in the Midwest. Very big story over there. My friends over in Northwestern have asked us to cover, my friends over in Nebraska. My friends in Northwestern do not want me to cover this. Nebraska wants us to cover it. And last but not least, the resignation / non-resignation of West Virginia coach Bob Huggins, who we've talked about on this podcast in the past. So anyway, we will get there. Matt, kick us off. Chiefsaholic. I'm going to lay up completely to you on this. So tell us where we are coming from, and then we'll get into what's happening today.
Okay, so some people might have heard this. I heard it a few months back that an individual commonly known as Chiefsaholic, a.k.a. Xavier Michael Babador, was arrested on federal charges involving bank theft and transportation of stolen property across state lines. And he had a criminal case and he was supposed to appear for court, and he didn't appear, which caused the bench warrant to be issued. That means, more commonly known as jumping bail, not showing up to court when you're supposed to. Fast forward to today, word comes out from the FBI press release that Mr. Babador, more commonly known as Chiefsaholic, has been arrested in Northern California after 3.5 months on the lam, 3.5-4 months on the lam. What was in these allegations, and I included the criminal complaint and the very important details in a thread I posted at Timpanic Law today. The key elements of this was that it wasn't some normal, okay, theft or something like that. The allegations are that Chiefsaholic is something out of the movies, a gangster movie, if that. If you've ever seen Hell or High Water, The Town, or Road to Perdition, that is what is being alleged. The FBI is alleging that Chiefsaholic is the culprit of a string of unsolved bank robberies in the Midwest.
Yeah, it just goes to show that if you're going to become, you know, a master serial killer or a criminal, not killer here, but bank robber in this case, maybe don't become an internet sensation at the same time. I know that the Chiefsaholic, with his signature like wolf head costume that he had going on, I mean, his pictures all over Twitter that we've seen today with the criminal charges being filed and stuff like that. So I guess this isn't advice, but I mean, it's one of those funny things. Like you said, it sounds like a movie. It's this guy who has become a sensation online and has also just went through this giant string of just really brazen bank robberies.
I'll jump in quick just so people don't know. The guy, I think it's a Wile E. Coyote like furry costume. I think that's the easiest way to explain it. People don't know what a furry is. I guess look it up. But yeah, I mean, I guess the easiest way to explain this, people want to go back in the ESPN Daily archives. There's a long episode. If you're listening to this, you're probably a podcast person, I imagine, good guess. But if you pop on, if you just do some light Googling, you'll see the kind of history of this. But this is a guy, I guess, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but he had a kind of a troubled life, allegedly, reportedly. It's not our reporting, but you know, I think he had a long, allegedly a long criminal record that people had done kind of their sleuthing on. And one day this guy, Chiefsaholic, just disappears from Twitter, stops tweeting. And everyone thinks it's really odd and he's not showing up at stuff. And everyone's like, wait, where could this guy have gone? And I'm not sure if it was ESPN. We'll say the internet at large kind of tried to maybe put two and two together. So there was kind of this ongoing story, what's going to happen to this guy. So Matt, that's kind of where we were. But why is everyone paying attention to the story today? And what's the latest development?
Because when I said earlier about these are allegations from a movie, I wasn't kidding. So what is actually being alleged by law enforcement? They allege that he committed this bank robbery where he walks into a, I think it's a bank in Missouri, and he's wearing a mask, he's wearing gloves, and he gives a note to the teller and he says, I got a gun, bring me to the bank vault. And he takes out $70,000 worth of cash. He then goes to a casino and essentially washes the cash. For those who don't know, washing cash is when you take dirty money, meaning that you have cash that is stolen, and you give it to casino, and they give you other cash back that is not stolen. And how he was able to do that, he was doing that all throughout the Midwest. There's a graphic that I posted in the tweets where it shows all these different banks he's allegedly had robbed, some of which in excess of $1 million, a total aggregate of what he's actually stolen. They've gone through his cell phone records, and they pinged his cell phone records right near the addresses of bank robberies on the day they were committed. The reason they know it's the cell phone that works is because they also ping that same very cell phone, and for five separate away games, like against the Buccaneers, against the Rams, against the Broncos, against the Cardinals, that same cell phone was also found in areas where he was known to be. So the connection between the two is this cell phone was near all these bank robberies, and this same cell phone was also in places we know that he was, and we have confirmation that he was. Additionally, there are photographs of the individual who allegedly committed these bank robberies. And when Chief Saholic was arrested, finally, he had items that looked strikingly similar, like the mask, the gloves that had yellow on the end. All of that goes into this makes strong circumstantial evidence that Chief Saholic is the individual who committed these bank robberies. But when you think about it, it's just mind-boggling what is being alleged. They are claiming this internet sensation who is a, like you said, a wily coyote who tweets everything about the Chiefs, is, when he's not on social media, is a cold-hearted bank robber, like something out of Road to Perdition or Hell or High Water, taking the money and then washing it at casinos. What is incredible is the allegations and how law enforcement is going step by step. It's like, okay, we've also pulled the casino transactions of the places where we know he's been, where he's deposited $70,000 and then into a casino, and then later he takes that same $70,000 and he puts it into a money market, a strikingly similar amount. The allegations, as we know, everybody's innocent until proven guilty, but these allegations are incredible when you read them.
No, I follow you, Matt. I think it's an interesting story. And the reason, and I guess people that aren't on social media, the people are like, why are you telling me that this Chiefs super fan that dresses like a coyote? It's a big story in our world. Adam Schefter's tweeting about it. It's a very big story in the football world. So if you have not heard about it, you should do your research on it. But it's a story without a parallel. I'm not aware of one, but I guess the other part of this, which we didn't say, is like, there was a person that was like, we've talked a lot in this podcast about John Ruiz. John Ruiz is like the booster that, I guess you can't call him a booster, but like, he's the guy that has a lot of money that's leading the Miami Hurricanes NIL program. And if all of a sudden it turned out that someone like a John Ruiz, or like, you know, you name anyone that's kind of like, you know, very, very notable for having money, like this guy, super, you know, the like Chiefsaholic, was at every single game, was at road games. Like, how does this person have all this money? And then, oh, the reason he has all this money is because allegedly he's robbing banks. Like, that's there's something there. There's something there. Matt, you know, I find the story interesting. So the guy, I mean, what's next year? Is the guy going to have a court appearance? What do we, I know, didn't the Department of Justice put out a statement today? Is that where you're getting a lot of
stuff? Yes. So a lot of the information I got from is the Department of Justice, because they provided a huge press release. And then I pulled up the criminal complaint, which actually lays out the allegations, the two charges, bank theft and transportation of stolen property across state lines. Those are the two main charges. It's possible that more charges are going to come to light. But from here, the next step is they're going to take these evidence to a grand jury. And based on what I am seeing, remember, grand juries, it's a much lower burden. It's just, is there probable cause? Like we've said in the past, a grand jury can indict a ham sandwich. Based on how well this case has been investigated, I have a hard time thinking this isn't going to end with an indictment. Where it goes from there, well, I think we'll discuss at a later time.
Justin, I see you're smiling over there. Have you heard of this guy before this story?
Yeah, I'd heard about him when he became sort of like this super fan that everybody had talked about. And of course, again, the timeline of him just sort of dropping off. I do remember it was one of those internet sensations where people were, you know, a tweet would be here that would have a little bit more information that's like, oh, well, he's doing this right now or this tweet. And it just led people in so many different rabbit holes. But yeah, it's definitely interesting. I think this story is probably more interesting than the stories that would have been made up if they would have gone that way.
Let's see. I we got to be safe in the wake of Brett Favre, Pat McAfee. But by the way, I don't know if we mentioned this. Maybe we did. Matt, have we talked about the ESPN buying up McAfee and like firing everybody else? Have we talked about this here?
I don't think so. I know because that's all I see in social media is people talking about how like, all the people that were fired and then Pat McAfee was what signed to like a $30 million contract, something like that. I think that's the number being reported. We don't know for sure, but it is certainly interesting that they got rid of a lot of people, some who've been there for 20, 30 years. And it's like, all right, you guys are out. And Pat McAfee's walking in as all those people who kind of helped build ESPN are walking out the door.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the reason I bring it up is McAfee settled that Favre case recently, and I was wondering if there was any connection between the announcement of McAfee and the layoffs of all these people. McAfee seems to be the center of ESPN's new venture, and that's not really new venture, their new content strategy. But yeah, anyway, it's a short diversion. But McAfee, Brett Favre, we spent so much time talking about it. We have to say allegedly, reportedly. You're like, Matt, the guy had the same gloves and he was at all the games and he had the same coyote crazy mask. Like how many other, like, okay. I mean, allegedly, reportedly, but I think it seems like, Matt, they have this guy boxed into a corner. Would you say how many other people could potentially fit this description? I mean, it seems pretty close here.
What I could tell you, I practice in federal court as a criminal defense attorney. When I'm doing that, as you understand, their conviction rate, the feds, the governments, the United States of America, whatever you want to call it, it's probably 95%. So if they're bringing these allegations, the statistics are on their side that they're usually going to be able to prove this. And with the circumstantial evidence that I'm seeing, photographs, similarities, I think it is reasonable to believe that Mr. Chiefsaholic, Mr. Babador committed these offenses, but until the case brought in front of a jury and see what evidence is actually admitted, we'll find out. As we've said on every podcast, whenever we discuss these, everybody's presumed innocent until proven guilty. It could be somebody else. It could be he's being framed. But to your point, I think it's reasonable to assume that he probably did, but whether he's actually convicted of these offenses, I can't say for sure.
Okay. I think we could put a pin in the Chiefsaholic stuff. If we have updates on it, you know, certainly we'll follow it. The story that popped up over the weekend, and I guess it's been brewing in the background in Big Ten country for several weeks. People have kind of had some whispers about this Northwestern hazing scandal. Justin, I'm going to give the brief overview, and then I want you to take it from here. And if we need to give a trigger warning, I guess this is it. The story gets kind of messy, but again, these are all allegations. There's a law firm that's involved. I think you can look it up. I think it's Arndt Fox.
Yeah, it's Arndt Fox and Schiff.
Arndt Fox and Schiff. So, here's the general gist. There is a former player that came forward and he said that there are hazing allegations within the organization. It was a question as to who knew exactly what was going on. So just in our pantheon of sports law stories, you know, there's obviously some vibes to the Joe Paterno stuff, right? We're not talking about underage kids as far as I'm aware, but it's still a question of some type of abuse going on in locker rooms. And the main question that you're asking yourself at the end of the day, at least as we are right now, A, whether these allegations are true or not, I think is important, whether they're exaggerated. I think obviously a fundamental question, but for our purposes, the legal question, whether and to what extent the organization knew, the coaches knew. So Justin, I'll leave it to you to kind of give us the background here, but a really big story. And there's already been some like preliminary discipline, but there's a question as to whether or not there's gonna be more discipline. But I'll take a step back here. Justin, take over.
Northwestern has been hit with these allegations of hazing that have included acts of hazing in a sexual nature as well. There's, you know, details that you can look up, but the main crux of this issue has to do with how much the coaching staff knew. When these sort of allegations came out and the stories came out, part of the stories included references to the coaching staff, specifically head coach Matt Fitzgerald, who would, according to the undisclosed player, would make signals during practice. And this signal was, kind of signaling to the upperclassmen specifically that a specific freshman or underclassman has been marked for this sort of hazing ritual, which they dubbed running. So it, you know, it brings into question a lot about, you know, hazing, and the history of it is obviously well known, but it's something that in today's day and age has started to become, you know, when it's present, it likes to be exposed because we like to get rid of it. And, you know, each school has a strict policy against hazing. So it's just, you know, a striking story to see this in a very, you know, big Northwestern Big Ten school that has apparently been hit with allegations on this football team.
I mean, I looked up, you know, Fitzgerald's program or Fitzgerald's tenure at Northwestern, 2006, 2022. He's been at the program for 16 years. So he is Northwestern. So people, again, I mentioned Joe Paterno, like people think of Penn State, they think of Joe Paterno, they think of Northwestern, they think of Pat. And you know, it's problematic to be so tied to someone like that. And now you have this problem. And now potentially, right, it could put a dark cloud, and maybe for better or for worse, a dark cloud over Northwestern successes, which have been, you know, pretty successful program in the last 16 years. Justin, what would you see? You signed a 10-year deal recently?
Yes, back in 2021, Fitzgerald had signed a 10-year extension on his contract.
So this is someone, I mean, this is the Northwestern football program. And Northwestern, obviously, we should mention it, one of the top academic programs in the country. But when the football team is good, right, and that's why they're giving him so much money, right? Football is king in probably the entire country. But yeah, I mean, I guess here's the question for you. And Matt, I'll bring you in on this one. Like, this is where the question goes from just a football story to a legal story. So the question is this. Let's get a little bit of context. Justin, how far back are these allegations supposed to go? How many years back?
As far as I'm concerned, these allegations are going back recently, at least with this player that just came out. But I think that this is something that they said has been going on for years.
Okay. So, Matt, I'll give it to you here. Just in a nutshell, right? The head coach of the football team, there's allegations of rampant sexual hazing in a football program. Just in a nutshell, in a vacuum, what are the chances on a percentage basis that the head coach is aware of what's going on in the locker room?
I'd have to say 80 to 90%.
Without knowing anything else, involved head coach.
Well, because think about it. The allegations are spanning years. So think of how long Coach Fitzgerald has been coaching Northwestern. What is their defense? Do they believe that, yes, this was passed down from player to player, completely without my knowledge? I have a real hard time thinking about this. I have a hard time when this case eventually, I think, ends up being a lawsuit, which I think is pretty reasonable to assume, is that, okay, when did Coach Fitzgerald know and when? And then when did the school know? Was the school completely in the dark about this? Because, like I said, I have it at 80, 90%, because I think it's really, really difficult that a guy who's basically created this program and built it up to the nothing it was when it was first founded, recruited these players, built them up, turned them into NFL players. And now it's these allegations that during that time, and is very recently involved in this sexual hazing. I can't help but think that he had to know. It could it be one of those Joe Paterno situations where he was essentially looking the other way? We don't know. But I have a real hard time thinking that he wasn't the guy who built this up and is very hands-on, did not know what was going on.
Yeah, I don't know if the number is 80 to 90, but I asked it to you in kind of a trick question. Let's say it's 80%. As Justin has explained it, and let's assume these allegations, but this part's true, that these allegations have been gone on for years. There's like a period, there's a culture of it. If the head coach knows about it and fosters it, encourages it, obviously massive problem. I think everyone would agree. The other side of it, he gave a statement on Friday, Fitzgerald, and he basically said he wasn't aware of it. He just wasn't aware that it was happening. So then that's, I think, a more difficult question. It's like, let's again, a couple of assumptions here. Let's say that's true. He doesn't know about it. And let's say it's true that this has gone on for years, so much so that a player, you know, is coming out and speaking of this whole history. And there's, I think that, you know, there's a picture that I think one media outlet found with like a certain allegations of a very graphic nature on a whiteboard in the locker room. And that it doesn't appear to be a staged photo. So it seems to be out in the open. So Matt, I'll give it to you. And Justin, you can take it too. Feel free. Is that also a fireable offense? Is it fireable that you don't know what's going under the roof? Is that someone you want in charge of your program? I think in either scenario, I'm not sure how he survives it. I don't.
What I can tell you is, at best, this is going on behind your back and you have absolutely no idea. So you're alleging to us, and remember, this is just our opinion. These are just what we actually believe. We're not trying to state fact here. At best, you are saying that this was going on without your know-how, even though you're very hands-on. So at best, you're negligent at not actually seeing this and not seeing potential signs. At worst, you knew what was going on and you looked the other way. And I think, Dan, you're right on the money. And I think the jury's going to say, a potential jury is going to say the same thing. It's like, you say you didn't know. It was your job to know. You recruited these players. I have a hard time thinking that these people, these individuals who are doing these allegations are not the ones he personally recruited. I want you to come to this program because I'm going to give you a scholarship. Even if you don't make it to the NFL, you're going to go pro in something else.
Yeah, let's put some color on it, too. I mean, like, for the Joe Paterno, there's a name that we have not mentioned here, right? And if Fitzgerald's defense is that I didn't know what was happening, someone beneath me was doing it, or the players were doing it, part of the, I guess, the defense appears to be that these were exaggerated. I think the law firm, Justin, and in doing this research, the law firm had, I think, I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I think generally corroborated the general gist of the facts. But they said it's not exactly on point, but there was enough stuff that was corroborated. So, you know, there's a name that we haven't mentioned while we're talking about Joe Paterno is Jerry Sandusky, who was a coach lower on the totem pole than Joe Paterno, who was the one directly involved in these allegations. So Paterno didn't lose his job because he was involved in the allegations. He lost his job because he didn't report them up enough the chain, or he didn't do enough to know about him, didn't do enough to stop them ahead of time. So we're really in the Joe Paterno world here, right? Assuming these allegations to be true, which, again, that's the main assumption that we can't take, right? Everyone's innocent until proven guilty. We can't assume things that have happened, but, you know, we're lawyers here. We're talking about hypotheticals. If the allegations are true and some lieutenant down the line or one of the coordinators or, you know, a player or a graduate assistant, if these things happened over the course of time, so much so that a reasonable person knew or should have known about it, I don't see him surviving this. Justin, what do you think?
Yeah, and I think the important point that we haven't really touched on the entire time, we're talking to hypotheticals about what he should have known. But like you mentioned earlier, he's been at the program since 2006. This isn't like a guy who was an assistant coach somewhere else and then, you know, got to the point where he was, you know, head coach material and then moved schools. This has sort of been a working up the chain sort of person who now finds himself in the head coaching position. And I mean, like you said, the quote from the report is that the claims were largely supported by evidence. So with the largely supported, you kind of are getting that corroboration, not fully. They did say that perspectives varied, which obviously is going to happen. You're going to have people witnessing different stuff. You're going to have upperclassmen who are going to vary from the underclassmen. But in the article and other things I've seen, there are, you know, allegations that other current and former players have said, yes, that has happened. Which only brings into confusion the letter that came out recently from, it's signed at the bottom, the entire Northwestern football team, with the entire word being all capitalized. But you have these stories and an investigation by Arndt Fox Schiff, which shows that players, you know, the entire team isn't on board with these allegations being false or largely exaggerated, like we said. So there's just a lot of conflicting, you know, reports going here. And I agree with Matt. I think this is going to lead to some sort of lawsuit just because of the allegations, if they happen to be true, whether or not Matt Fitzgerald knew. I think the lack of knowing and not being aware is going to be just as damaging for him.
I agree. I mean, this is a story still unfolding. The one thing that, you know, We have to be, as a kind of sports law community, as kind of messy as these stories are, these are the stories that kind of, I don't want to say require our attention. These are the stories where lawyers are needed, right? You know, again, we tried to preface this, and we've all, I think, done a good job in this podcast saying allegedly, reportedly, like, we don't know this stuff to be true. We are not reporting any of this stuff, but we have to go through the mental gymnastics of, like, if this is true, what are the ramifications of it? So just, you know, don't get it twisted. We're following the story just like everybody else is, but we've got to talk through this stuff. Okay. Last but not least, and maybe we'll throw some stuff at the back end. Bob Huggins. Justin, I see you smiling. Matt, how familiar are you with the story? Matt, I'll start with you.
I literally thought the case, like, this matter was like a done deal. And then I see this report that it's like, no, I didn't resign. I was like, that's fake news. I was like, what?
Okay.
I was like,
I was laying it up. I didn't want to give all the specifics. So this is a bizarre story. And we talk about, you know, our first story, Chiefsaholic, has no precedent. I think the Bob Hug or the Pat Fitzgerald story, obviously there are stories about hazing allegations, so we have some background to talk about. I have never heard of this. I've never heard of what's happening with Bob Huggins. So a little bit of background here. And Conlon and I talked about this maybe a month ago. So Bob Huggins is the coach, West Virginia basketball coach. He's a long and storied coach. So he was in the headlines twice in the last couple months, I think since March, but there was a inappropriate slur that Bob Huggins said on West Virginia sports radio. People can Google that. I'm certainly not going to say that. And that resulted in him agreeing to reduce his salary, you know, and that I think was a way to avoid him getting fired, because the word he said, in the context he said it, I listened to the interview. The context was, it was not taken out of context. It was legitimately said. That could have resulted in a firing. It was not. He reduced his salary. Okay, fine. We move on. So I think this was June. Yeah. So in June, there's a DUI. Bob Huggins has a drunken driving arrest. And I'm just going to read this. You kind of can't make this up. It's June 16th. So a breath test determined Huggins' blood alcohol content was more than twice the legal limit. His resignation was announced by the university the following night. A week later, assistant coach Josh Eilert, I think his name, was promoted to interim head coach for 23-24. So, Matt, when you say you thought the story was done, it was done, right? There was nothing else to talk about. So this is you guys know I'm a wrestling person. And this is like the Undertaker, Jeff. Like, Bob Huggins pops back up, literally just like you just did, Matt. He sits back up and he's like, no, I have not resigned. So his lawyer, I mean, you can't really make this up, but basically Bob Huggins has hired an attorney, and is basically this guy, a Cleveland-based lawyer named David Campbell, wrote a letter to the university on Friday that said, quote, Huggins, quote, never signed a resignation letter and never communicated resignation to anyone at West Virginia University. That's odd. I feel like I've heard of some sort of resignation here. Like, the school just assumed that he resigned. So the university responded to Campbell in a letter decided that read, quote, we are frankly confused by the allegations within the letter. It's probably interesting that's confusing. So West Virginia, according to West Virginia, said that Huggins met with his players and members of the basketball staff on June 17th, so the day after the DUI, to announce that he would no longer be coaching the team. Okay, that seems very odd. And then go a little further. So he met with the team the day after, but he's saying he didn't resign and sign a resignation notice. Like, okay, so what are we missing here? So the university, West Virginia, provided the AP with a copy of a notice sent by Huggins' wife, June, the same day he met with the players. It read, so this is a message sent by Huggins' wife from an email address associated with June Huggins. Okay. Quote, please accept this correspondence as my formal notice of resignation as West Virginia's head basketball coach and as my notice of my retirement from West Virginia University effective immediately. Okay. So an email from Bob Huggins' wife that says, please accept this correspondence as my formal notice. We have found it. We have found where the entire legal argument rests, team. Is this alleged that the wife does not have the ability to send an email on behalf of the husband? Is that where we're at?
I when I heard this,
what's your gut reaction? Is that what it is?
I think they're more likely going to go with the he He went into the locker room and told his players he was no longer going to be the coach. I don't know how what West Virginia laws are as to resignations. One has to think this has to do with the fact that since he resigned, he doesn't get the rest of his contract, and had a, as opposed to being fired, which eventually they would probably have to wrangle it out in court and he gets some kind of settlement, whatever, over whatever remains of his contract, a lesser amount. Because the West Virginia would be like, oh, you resigned. All right, thank you. Well, we're not paying you any more money. You've retired. So I definitely think that we're in a, if I were to give like some law school answer, we're in maybe an agency law argument from the wife's accounts stating that this is a formal resignation letter and a what, and like announcing that his resignation, like an oral contract, if it were, it's like, I'm not your coach anymore. So we have, I it really is just bananas when you think about what is actually.
Well, let's, before we, but like, well, Justin, I want to just add this as context. This says the quote, he never signed a resignation letter and never commuted a resignation to anyone at West Virginia. West Virginia said he met with the players. What was he just like going out to brunch with the players? Never, the topic never came up. That's what the argument is. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, it just, this screams somebody that thought they were going to get something for resigning, but then realized they were going to lose it all and needed to be fired. So they're trying to be reinstated to then get fired. But I agree. The facts are just bonkers. Like the fact that it was sent from his wife's email, but it says, this is my resignation. Like that just screams bringing, you know, the something into a case that a jury could go, well, I mean, his wife can't resign. She didn't have a job. And
let me give you the time frame. I think I think we could take some humor in this, but like, you know, this message is sent from the wife's email address, or an email address purporting to be known from an email address associated with June Huggins. Okay, it was her email address. I don't know, it's not that complicated. So West Virginia Athletic Director Ren Baker responded an hour later by writing, quote, we accept your resignation and wish you the best in retirement. We appreciate your many years of dedication to West Virginia. Okay, less than an hour after that, the university released two statements. One announced Huggins' resignation from the university. The other was a message titled, quote, a message from Bob Huggins to the West Virginia community. Quote, today I have submitted a letter to President Gordon Gee and blah, 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 informing them of my resignation and intention to retire as head men's basketball coach at the West Virginia University effective immediately. Okay, here's my question. Okay, let's assume all of these things happen. And let's assume he wants to pretend like, hey, like this agency thing with my wife and I didn't do this. And I didn't sign a letter and blah, blah. What has Bob Huggins done between June 17th and July 7th to correct the record? Like, was the first thing to say that? Because that's what we call acquiescing, right? If everyone's saying that you resigned and you didn't really resign, and everyone's treated like you've resigned, they've hired a new coach, they've gone to recruits, they've done all this. Like, what have you done? Have you done absolutely nothing for 3 weeks? I was speaking to a client recently. There was a something close to a material breach in the contract where someone could have gotten out of a contract. So like, they were on the fence as to whether or not they were going to treat this as a material breach. So, and they're like, well, we still like the other side and we're not really sure we want to get out of the contract. I'm like, okay, here's what you do. You send a letter to the other side saying that you are evaluating whether this rose the level of material breach. Give yourself some options. Put them on notice that you might be doing something about it. If, again, we have no idea what Bob Huggins did or didn't do. But sure, if I was a head coach of West Virginia basketball and I didn't resign and West Virginia put out a letter from Bob Huggins to the West Virginia community saying that I resigned, I probably want to put something out to correct the record, or else I have acquiesced to it. So speaking of things that like are going to be tough legal arguments, I have no idea how Bob Huggins gets himself out of this. And Matt, you're right. He's definitely doing this because they owe him a ton of money under the contract. Unless he resigns and he, you know, abdicates his rights under the contract, he forfeits his rights. But they have to fire him. And I imagine there's language in the contract that says, if we fire you, we'll pay you out X or Y. And I think it took him 2.5 weeks to realize that.
Well, and that was the problem with him doing the resignation letter and all everything like that, is he didn't speak to a lawyer before he did all of that. Or even his agent, if he has one, whom both would have told you is like, no, yeah, they probably have maybe grounds to terminate you. But if they do, it would have to be for cause. And that's the only way they can get away with not paying you out the rest of the remainder of your contract. As we know from Chris Beard's case, who used to be the coach at University of Texas, when the allegations of domestic battery, they were later dropped, but he was still fired. And then I believe he filed a lawsuit to recoup part of the money he was owed. That was for that allegation. Bob Hudgens didn't realize, and I don't know how it's possible that he was able to do without speaking to, I don't know how many lawyers who would pick up the phone in West Virginia, as you're the basketball coach of one of the only things to do in West Virginia, watch West Virginia basketball. And this idea that it's like, oh, no, I didn't actually do that. I was like, well, this was an email sent from your wife's account stating to be you. They sent you a response, and then they put out a statement. And like you said, none of which you tried to correct at all until recently, until some attorney told you, until somebody looked at your contract and was like, oh, yeah, they're not going to pay you anything. So now we have to do this whole spiel. And with that lawyer's letter, their response is like, I don't know that when a lawyer responds with that kind of thing, like, I'm kind of really confused, baffled. I'm saying, where do you get off? I'll translate. Where do you get off thinking that you have any kind of standing here? Like, your client did not actually read his own contract or didn't speak to one of the, I don't know how many people who could have read it and interpreted it for him. That's not on us. Is this going to be litigated heavily? Yes. Is it going to end with Bob Hudgens getting paid out? Probably not.
Yeah. One of the things that I found very interesting in the letter that the lawyer sent to the school is that part of what they're alleging is that he wasn't given due process or even an interview to determine the true facts, not those reported
by
the
media. He resigned.
He doesn't need due process. Well, I think the facts have to do with the DUI. I think that is what they're alleging, is that there's something in the facts that is not true that was reported by the media. I don't know. It seems like they're reaching at everything. Irrelevant. Yeah, it does. It's just like, it's very like, what do they have going on behind the scenes that they think they have that is leading them to believe this is any sort of case?
The other part of it too is like, sometimes people resign, and listen, we're not, I gather this is just going to come under West Virginia law. I don't know where the choice of law is in the contract, but none of us are West Virginia lawyers. But like, from an outside perspective, like, there are reasons that people resign. Like, you don't just resign because you did the thing. Sometimes you resign because of the distraction. And I very purposely gave the history with Bob Hudgens. He just had an incident where he said it, and again, I won't say it, but a very inappropriate term to refer to a class of people. And that was like a couple months prior. And I don't know if they're refuting this at this point, but there seems to have been reports that he was arrested for a DUI. So the distraction by itself that he was arrested for a DUI could be reason enough to retire them, whether the truth or the due process and whether he did it, whether his legal limit was X or Y or Z, you know, two strikes. And maybe there was some implicit thing he said to himself, you know, I'm a distraction. I don't want to coach anymore. I want to resign. I don't want to put West Virginia through these headlines. Like, that's separately a reason to resign. So I think the story is bizarre. And I think at the end of the day, we follow the money. The money, I'm sure, in the contract would have paid him had they had to fire him. And that's certainly what happened. In a moment of weakness, he probably said, you know what, I don't want to put West Virginia through this. And then he realized, wait, how much money did I just give up by doing that? Let's play that reverse Uno card and let me get that one back, which is not how it works. Okay, Matt, Justin, anything else on this before we do some loose ends?
I would love to know the attorney's claim, like statement of the case, theory of the case, and how they're going to recover. That'll be really interesting to me. And what good facts do they have on their side?
I just want to know how many attorneys Bob Hudgens has. I want to know the number.
Apparently not enough, because not one of them could find that if he resigned, he would lose out the remainder of his contract.
A million. Okay, let's do some business here. Our podcast sponsored by Better Edge. Use our promo code CONDUCT for $20 on sign up. Colin will be back with us either later this week or next week. We'll do some more baseball picks. We're in like the dead of baseball right now, with the All-Star break going on. There's no basketball. People are buzzing about the summer league. You know, there's no NFL. There's not much going on. I know there's a big UFC card this weekend, but like, you know, this is like the dead of the sports calendar. So let's do this. And then I think we can call it a day. This headline I thought was too funny. Again, I've been, you know, I pay attention to sports beat. There's not that much going on as of late. Wembanyama versus Britney Spears. Like,
oh my God,
I saw this and I'm like, I saw the headline and I'm like, that can't be true. Like, that's not possible. So Wemby is now going to be affectionately referred to as the number one pick in the NBA draft. He's supposed to be a generational talent of the LeBron James arc. I think Woj called him the best prospect like in the history of basketball humanity. So you'll see him at some point. He's like a Kevin Durant hybrid. He's a big, lanky guy, can shoot threes, plays in the paint. So why I say that, Vegas is buzzing. The summer league is like the busiest it's ever been because people want to get a glimpse. Get a glimpse at Wemby, and obviously Scoot's down there, and Brandon Miller, who, Matt, you're smiling. We spent a lot of time with Brandon Miller on this podcast. But anyway, everyone's down to summer league. So guess who's also in Vegas apparently this time of the year? Maybe she's got her residency. Maybe that's what it is. But Brittany is, sees Wemby, Victor Wembanyama, sees him walking around. It looks like a casino of some sort. And he's got like a posse around him and a crazed blonde woman. I said that very intentionally, appears to either attempt to or actually succeed in grabbing Wembanyama from behind. So who is Wembanyama walking with? A very recognizable giant individual of a human being, well in excess of 7 feet tall. He's walking with some security, who I believe was Spurs security, his draft pick of the Spurs. He's obviously not walking without cover. And a crazed blonde woman attempts to, or actually does grab him. And what does security do? They do their job and they swat this woman's hand like a fly. And someone screamed like, "That's Britney." And she's like, "This is America." And I don't know what was going on, the crazy scene, but like, what do you expect to happen when, if you go out and try to grab a celebrity and they're walking with security, what do you think is going to happen? Now I asked that question. The person who allegedly did the grabbing is Britney Spears, who I'm sure has had this happen to her. Did she just not like think what would happen if the roles were reversed? Like, if someone did that to Britney Spears, they wouldn't just have gotten their hands swatted. They would have gotten like tackled, killed, bloodied, put into a back room, and like never heard from again. So, Matt, you're our DA here. I wanted to cover this one. I find the story to be interesting. Like, I mean, like, I don't see anything on tape that was done that Britney Spears is aggrieved by. I don't think she has any leg to stand on here.
She is absolutely none. It was when I heard this case, I could not believe what I was hearing. It's that, okay, this guy is a brand new first pick. I think he played, I have an update on that. I think he played one game and he kind of choked. If it were, wasn't,
he didn't play that well. No, he looked,
and
surely,
the Spurs were like, we're going to shut him down for the rest of the summer. And all the people who bought summer league tickets thinking they're going to see Wembanyama are like, what? What is this? I came to Vegas. I spent all this money. And now the one person, because most of those people who show up in the summer league are just recent draft picks. And like people like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown have played in it. A lot of top prospect, and Wembanyama, he was like supposed to be this generational talent. And when I saw like what was alleged with Britney Spears, she goes, and I think law enforcement actually said they reviewed the video, and Britney Spears' hand hits her own face. So what I think actually happened is Britney Spears goes to swat at Wembanyama, and his security swats at her hand, and her hand hits her face. So in essence, this whatever battery was Britney Spears on Britney Spears. Could you make the argument that it was transferred intent, that the security caused her to commit a battery on herself? Yeah, perhaps, but there's literally nothing there. It was a beyond ridiculous situation where I don't know how somebody, like you said, somebody of Britney Spears who spent most of the 90s being chased around by the paparazzi and every single individual crazed fan imaginable trying to get a picture, just trying to touch her hand, thinks it's a good idea to go up to a 7'5" basketball player who have 300-pound security guards with her. It's like just to like graze her, his body. I don't know what was going through her head. And the fact that she like released a statement like saying that, like, oh, this is what happened. And it's just like, oh my God, come on, Brittany. Like everything, like, yeah, it's Vegas, right? Only in Vegas with something ridiculous like that. One celebrity tries to swat another celebrity and instead hits her own face.
Yeah, I will say that when I was in Vegas for the concert that I went to out there, it wasn't the weirdest thing I would have seen when I was out in Vegas. But also, we'll say that Wembanyama did come back a little bit. He played yesterday and had 27 points and 12 rebounds in his summer league second game. So the debut might have been a little lackluster. But yeah, it just, this story screams like somebody took Wembanyama and then a wheel like on the internet of about 1,000 celebrities and then just hit randomize and Britney's name popped up. And that's how this story came to be, because it's so weird that, you know, it's like Britney Spears. And of course the security guard has no idea who she was. If you look at the video, it's kind of like she's coming from behind. And so he just kind of is swatting when he sees a hand. I don't think that he even saw Britney before she got to the point where he was making contact with her. But I agree with you. I don't think there's anything here. I just think it's another wild story. And, you know, I guess it's just another story that's going to follow him as the number one prospect that has come to the draft in a very long time.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, we should make the joke here. It's like, hit me, baby, one more time. It's like, okay.
Oh my God.
What happened here? Like, there was a lot of hoopla around this incident, and I watched the video. Video is out. I tweeted it out. It's like, nothing. I think the tweet was like, Britney Spears hit in the face by Wembanyama security. And it's like, technically, that's maybe what happened. There was maybe a contact with like a fingernail with a piece of Britney's face, but this was not the like open hand slap or punch that we thought was going to happen. So people tweeted at me, they're like, assault, sports law lost. And I'm like, no.
This is the assumption
of the risk, gentlemen. You grab a celebrity surrounded by security guards. This is what happens. She's lucky it wasn't worse. So I don't feel bad at all. Zero.
I literally, Dan, when I saw this, I was like, is this like a publicity stunt? I was like, does Britney like kicking off like her residency and nobody knows about it because everybody's too busy looking on social media of the Vegas Sphere that every can't go like 10 minutes without seeing whatever advertisement they have on it. I honestly, when I heard this, I was like, because there's an old saying, it's like, there's no such thing as bad publicity. People weren't talking about Britney Spears. And then all of a sudden, boom, viral, millions talked around the globe about swatting at this guy who's played one game of a summer league versus a pop superstar who has sold, I don't know how many hundred million albums. So for me, I literally felt like this was a publicity stunt. Like you can't even imagine. It's like, oh, I'm going to make this so much more because nothing will come of it. And I'll get like 48 hours of free media. And oh, look at my ticket sales went up for my show or whatever. That's how I felt.
Do you know who I feel bad for in all this? Victor Wembanyama is a French national. He's coming to the country. There are so much, like, you can't even measure the amount of expectations and pressure on this guy to succeed right away. Right? He's got this kind of, you know, like bowl-esque body type. He's like a skinny guy. You know, those guys don't often succeed in the NBA. And this guy's being known as a generational prospect. So he has to buck the trend of the physical trend. There aren't many people this body size that have long and successful careers. His skill set is like unheard of to shoot threes and block shots. Like doesn't exist. If all this pressure on him, and I watched the video, he doesn't even know what is occurring as it's happening. And now all of a sudden, he's like, they're like the Britney stands that like love Britney, like Wembanyama, he shouldn't have done this. Like the security guard should have known. So he's in like in America. It's his first game, like his first week playing for an NBA team. And this is what happens. So like, welcome to the American like tabloid culture. Like you're now a part of it, Wemby. And like, you know, I don't think he played that well over the weekend. They shut him down. And I think he needed a break. Like, I think there were people asking him questions about Britney. Matt, I hope you know this. Maybe Justin, you can look this up. Wasn't Britney quoted as saying something crazy right after it happened? Like, this is America. This is the America we live in. Wasn't there something crazy?
It is. I don't know where she's getting off. And it's like, all right, are you drunk while you're doing this? Are like,
wait,
is
there Matt, something... say the line. Say, what did Britney say?
She said, this is bleeping America. like who says that? It's like, you're harassing this guy who wasn't even alive while you are like a pop superstar and this random crazed person, you have security with you for a reason. And this random blonde woman comes up to most of us would have known it was Britney Spears, but I really don't think even if Victor Wembanyama knew like he was being like somebody was trying to touch him, I don't even know if she knew who she was. I don't even think she was alive by the time.
Can I read you this? This is too good. I'm sorry. I know this podcast is going a little long. This is too good. So she was this is a quote from a Yahoo article. this can't be. So there's an eyewitness. Again, an eyewitness, this guy, Brian Grahalis. So he's claiming that he was an eyewitness to this event. This can't be made. Maybe it is, but it's too funny not to read. She was approaching him, like I said, in a British accent, saying, "Excuse me, sir." And I guess trying to get his attention for possibly a picture. But when they walked right into the Catch restaurant, that's when she leaned in, got her way into a circle. She put his hand on his back, blah, 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 blah. So I'm not sure why Britney was talking in a British accent. I don't know why this eyewitness would make that up. But apparently, apparently she was screaming like, "This is bleeping America," while using the British accent. Are we missing something? Is Britney doing a British tour? Are we missing something?
Maybe. No. What I was going to say is maybe she's trying to improve her acting after her performance in the movie Crossroads from 2000, which magnificently bombed at the box office because Britney Spears can't act. Maybe she's trying a little comeback. I don't know. Or she's like, well, I'm about to go to the UK. I might as well try to fit in. Either way, it just every time you read another fact of this story, it gets more absurd, more ridiculous, and more it makes your head shake like, Brittany, why did you need to do this? What in your head told you this is a good idea?
I can tell you. Nothing. Zero. there was not much thought involved. Why not a French accent? Why not a French accent? Guy's French.
Because she can't do that. She's like,
my wife and I were talking, and I don't want to get in trouble with the Britney stans, and I imagine our crossover between Britney stans and sports law people is not that great. But, you know, there's a lot of made of Britney getting out of her conservatorship and that she had to prove that she was of sound mind and she was sane. Anyone that, again, assuming these to be true, that she's in a British accent screaming, "Excuse me, sir, excuse me," and walking into a circle of giant human beings to only to grab a celebrity and then screaming, "This is bleeping America," in the same British accent, that person's not doing that well. Again, assuming all these things to be true, that person is not doing that well. So sorry, Britney stans, but, you know, that seems to be the case. Justin, Matt, anything else before we put this episode in the books? No. Happy belated 4th. We're going to get back on more of a normal recording schedule. Shout out to the guys over at the NIL Hour. They've been holding down the fort. But we'll get back to more of a normal recording schedule. But yeah, appreciate Matt, Justin jumping on. Shout out to Chiefsaholic and to the furry coyote people and to the Britney stans. Hopefully we did not offend you and you don't turn off this podcast. Remember to rate, review, subscribe. I should mention, if you do want to write for us a conduct detrimental, we've seen a nice uptick in articles as of late. I apologize to the people that have reached out to try to schedule calls and do informationals. I'll try to get around to everyone. My main advice, if you're looking for a little bit of piece of it, I think that writing, as Justin and Matt, I'm preaching to the choir here. You guys are big writers. Matt, you in particular, I know you have a Chiefsaholic story that you just posted online. There's no shortage to writing. So everyone, I think the new people that are writing for the site are a lot of people that I've been speaking to. I'm saying we created the website for people to write. We created the website. Why? So when you apply and try to get a lateral job or an entry-level sports law job, you have something that is so different on your resume that nobody else will have, that on paper, it will differentiate you. Everyone sounds good in an interview. Everyone thinks they interview well, but most people don't get the interview because the resume doesn't jump off the page. So that's what we're here to do. That's it. So a little bit of PSA. If you want to write for us on conduct, reach out to condetrimental@gmail.com and we will get you set up. Shout out to our new site editor, Bryce Goodwin, who has been crushing it. We love Bryce. Okay. We will end it here. Shout out to all of our writers of conduct, Matt, Justin, thank you. Shout out to Dan Wallach. And that'll do it. We will see you next time on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.